Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
Yep.
And so let's see. So what else is going on?
Oh, yeah, that was a long meeting.
All right.
So went off about what? 10:30? I don't know.
See, we're talking about sort of civic stuff here to avoid the politics, but hey, we could go there
what
too.
Politics?
Well, you know, we'll get to, maybe we'll say a little bit. But
local politics.
So one of the topics at the council meeting it arrived in sort of multiple forms.
There was a committee hearing about it.
I mean, actually, I'm gonna actually group a whole bunch of things. I hope I get them all here. But it's all about energy.
Yeah.
Okay. So whether it's Eversource and electrical power, and whether the
go ahead.
So Grand Junction petition will be allowed to expire and be refiled because they're still trying to work something out
with the Eversource
location possible relocation, which is not a guarantee, but it's a possibility. You know, there was an order that was filed some while ago that's gone through the process, got a negative recommendation from the planning board.
Oh, right. That was on the
Article 19
revisions.
That
was on the city manager's agenda.
Yeah, which, you know, I don't know if I would say this with absolute certainty, but it seemed like the intention was to say that any project over a certain scale has to show that it's going to have no substantial impact on the infrastructure in the city.
So it was the net zero effect or something?
Well, I think they're kind of maybe, you could certainly, in the bright side, say, well, we're just trying to encourage things to be net zero. But on the other side, you might be saying, well, you're just trying to stop the construction of new buildings.
I don't think that's... just trying to control the kind of building
You know, though things may evolve in time, truth is that there are no actual net zero buildings in Cambridge. What there are, it depends on, it's sort of a...
When you say net zero, do you mean it uses energy totally from renewables? So,
well, no, the thing is that if you're talking about, some of it is done because you simply choose to buy your... power from renewable resources, but the building itself is definitely not
right. But you're offsetting by buying these credits or something.
You either buy credits or you agree to purchase it. So it's partly a matter of accounting.
But they're not going to be called a net zero building then,
right?
But they might call it
right. But here's the misunderstanding, and I don't think it's my misunderstanding.
Okay.
Is that if you're going to simultaneously argue about infrastructure impacts and the fact that we're getting sort of ready to top off on the grid, then if the power is coming from windmills on the Cape or nuclear power someplace or whatever, it's still coming off the grid, and you still use the same transformers regardless.
And that's really what Eversource is
originated.
About. It's not where
it's
the
delivery.
It's not the generation of it. It's the delivery of it.
Yeah. So you can be
right.
You can through good accounting, you can basically say we are net zero from an overall environmental impact.
Point.
But ultimately, the grid still has to deliver the power to you,
and
the thing is that if you pass like this Article 19 bit, you know, that basically says you're not going to be putting any further, you're not going to tax the existing electrical infrastructure anymore. You know, then you're basically saying don't build the building, right?
What does it say that you're not? I thought it said you can't use natural. Is that a separate thing? What did the planning board, what did it actually not recommend?
You know, the planning board basically said that, first off, they said, we don't really have the authority to be regulating this, something that's fundamentally really regulated by the state. I mean, so that was definitely a piece of it.
All right.
You know, I think everybody acknowledges that more information is better.
Yeah.
So to whatever degree you can actually get information in about projects so you can understand the cumulative and also site-specific impact.
Right.
All the better, right? Nobody's going to really argue that, right? Mm. So anyway, I don't know really where that stands. All they could really do is sort of refer it to the petition, and then that matter is still to be adjudicated by the ordinance committee and the full council.
And the city manager agreed with that, right? Not to adopt. Yeah.
So. You know, but meanwhile, you know, there's like the CART petition, so they want to be changing things down around Cambridge Side Galleria. Mm. So then immediately people start bringing in this issue of, well, what's the energy impact going to be? It's now become kind of standard part of the argument now, saying what's the impacts on the infrastructure.
Well, that, that should be.
I actually think we should. It should have always been part of the discussion.
Yeah, I thought it always was.
But you know, the unfortunate reality about the way Eversource works is they tend to be pretty much entirely reactive. Yeah. So in other words, they plan somewhat ahead, but the thing is, they pretty much wait until their system is maxed out, either in a city block or in an entire neighborhood or a whole city, and then they start worrying about planning ahead.
Because it seems most people complain about height, and density, and meanwhile, where are you getting your energy from? Right. Who's supplying it? Yeah. So now that's become more.
You can build facilities to provide and improve things in order to provide the power, but I don't think that's the
right. So then that leads into some of the orders and stuff.
Right. That's the electrical part of things. There's also gas, natural gas. Yeah. Right. So the Mothers Out Front folks speaking at the council meeting, primarily about the natural gas infrastructure issue. So I think it's Councilor Zondervan, but there were also co-sponsors want to
prohibit new construction,
new gas hookups in the city.
But it was unclear what is new construction. Is it somebody building their house? Is it somebody like I know who's renovating maybe half the house? Are they going to have, what is this?
It's tough. And to some degree, even if you have the best of intentions in terms of environmental protection and whatever, the truth is that you're in conflict with people's choices, like, for example, shall I be privileged because I have a 1912 house that has gas infrastructure in it, so that if you like having gas stoves or gas heating, that I have the right to have that?
Do you have any, when you pay your bills, are you paying for renewables? Did you opt into that program?
I just opted into the city's municipal aggregation, but I didn't go for anything.
Because I want to read this, because I really am curious. It said, this is electricity generation in Massachusetts, according to the Massachusetts site. In 2018, Massachusetts generated 67% of its electricity from natural gas and none from coal, making us the third New England state without coal-fired generation. Almost all the rest of Massachusetts' electricity generation came from nuclear power and renewables. So what I don't understand is, I don't think people get that electricity has to come from somewhere.
Right.
And that I'm not saying we shouldn't go down, we should be looking forward and I'd love to get off of fossil fuels, but natural gas is where this your charging stations are getting it from. So what do they mean by banning it in homes?
But this is the reason why some of the activist community will try and block pipelines to deliver.
Well, that's happening right now in Quincy.
Gas,
because they
want to force the issue.
But they don't want coal. They don't want we don't have the capacity right now to do it all from solar. We don't have the right.
Well, my friends at MIT consistently argue we really should be furthering nuclear power.
Well, I heard that from some particle physicists from a while ago, and many people from MIT have said, we've got to figure that part out, because that's really, you can't go there.
Right. I mean, remember when we were nuclear free zones, when Cambridge declared itself a nuclear free zone, we were in fact 51% of our power was nuclear at the time.
So I just feel like that no one is looking at that. It's like, ban it, but then what are you replacing it with?
Right. So the thing is, the bottom line is, if I can't use natural gas to heat my home and I have to use electric heat, and hopefully, we insulate our homes and do all the best practices.
Oh, not use as much. You don't have to be there.
So to what degree you're actually getting the power, if it's all still coming from a gas-fired electric generating plant up the stream, then tell me, what's the net
benefit? I just heard something on the radio, and I want to confirm it, but this guy is driving across the country in an electric car, and they interviewed him in Iowa. He could not find an electrical charging, so he figured he had to go to someone's house and use their dryer vent or something.
Yeah.
But I heard him say that Iowa, one of these states, is actually, it's reviving the coal industry because they can provide electricity. I'm thinking, wait a minute. You're advocating electrical cars and then you're advocating coal generation. So
it's a bit of
it's crazy.
I mean, I Yeah. You know, if I was 100% optimistic about this, yeah, I'd say, okay, fine, you want to go that route.
Yeah.
And you want to also advocate for stopping fracked gas being transported across state lines to reach us here. And you want to block LNG tankers from entering Boston Harbor.
Stop using your computer.
Right.
Stop using Alexa.
Right.
Stop doing
this. Right. And let's all super insulate everything, whatever. And, you know, listen, maybe, you know, 10, 15, 20 years out, maybe... Yeah. Maybe we'll actually find some balance, which is pretty good. But the thing is, you know, you can't get at too ahead of the curve
by just banning things.
Just by banning things, I think people need to be a little more judicious in their choices.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, it's definitely a part of it. And I'll say, you know, having gone to some candidate forums, you know, even though I mean I personally feel that municipal issues that are very specifically municipal issues are really what voters should be focusing on. But the truth is that you get a lot more attention
when you
bring in national style or international scale issues and you run as that. I mean, I don't think, sorry to sound cynical, but if you were to add up the total net effect of environmental programs that the city does, the total net effect in terms of the big picture, negligible.
What do you mean?
Meaning, you know, if you pull people out of cars and you change things here, it's still overall what one city can do is still just a
tiny little drop in the bucket. Yeah, but one city at a time. I mean, I still think we should be doing it, though.
My feeling is we all should be making better choices for better insulation, better, you know, energy efficiencies, don't drive as much, do all of these things. And to whatever degree that there's a real absolute necessity of mandating these things through government, okay, fine. But, you know, like we had mandatory recycling, right?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we didn't really come and, you know, beat down the doors of somebody who had
plus, to, you know, I mean, if you have the money, and let's face it, you have to have some money, there are so many tax credits for solar this and solar that.
Yeah.
You can do that because you're getting all these tax credits.
Yeah.
I mean, unless that's dried up, I don't know.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I guess the main point is that energy considerations, whether it be practical or political, were definitely part of what people were talking about. And as I say, also some of the candidates, they speak at candidate forums.
Well, it's like when they ban all plastics.
Right.
Because now, it's interesting, the sidelight. I mean, Craig Kelly brought something up about going to one of the East Cambridge business meetings, and they were concerned business owners about the single-use plastic and how it would affect them. And I'm glad he brought it up because we didn't bring that up the last time. We didn't, you know, stake out small businesses. But you've got to think about this and how it affects the small, it's great to say, well, don't tell them to use compostables necessarily because that's going to get thrown out. That just creates a problem too. It's that people do not understand all those
absolutely
things,
true.
You know?
Yeah. I think there is a fundamental disconnect. I hate that phrase. A fundamental disconnect.
A fundamental disconnect. Like that's what's going on in general.
That's true. But the thing is, political people sell themselves based on sort of idealism and ideals.
And what people want, right, and what they think
Whereas,
they want.
Whereas, as we know from being when we were on the Recycling Advisory Committee, is that the actual realities of recycling is
more you got to look at the
nuanced,
whole picture, the whole loop, not just one item. You got to look at what's happening, how much energy is used in creating that paper bag or whatever.
Right.
Or that small plastic, is it really that much, that straw? Oh, well, I don't want to bring up that point again.
Really.
I brought it up last week about the plastic straw.
Right. But if you're at a candidate forum and you talk about, you know, basically what, you know, climate change, affordable housing, whatever, right? Okay. Well, those are all important things. But the thing is that you don't solve a climate problem with just a town.
No.
It's a much bigger issue.
Live your talk.
You don't even solve housing problems with a single town either. It's a bigger issue, you know?
Right, but I think you should be working on those, but you should also do what you can for your quality of life.
Right.
You want to live in a place that feels right to you.
Oh, yeah, right.
But don't pretend that it's going to solve,
But I will say, I think I was just mentioning to you earlier that, you know, it's 4 weeks to the election, municipal election.
I see a lot of signs, but I don't know.
I've seen more and more signs, and there's going to be a whole flurry of candidate forums coming up. Some of the better ones, like Porter Square, Mid-Cambridge ones, I think those are pretty good ones. You know, the new Cambridge Citizens Coalition had their one this past Sunday as well. But there's also another one, the CEOC people.
Oh, which we should remind people, CCTV has been videotaping all of these. They do it Facebook Live, almost all of them. Yeah. And they're available. You're going to link them on your site?
They're all linked now. The ones that they have available, if you go to the very bottom of the Cambridge Candidate pages, they have links to all of them.
Plus, you can go to the CCTV site.
And you can find them there. Though it's a little tricky to find them when I was looking. But
you can.
Yeah, but I'm direct linking them to the specific videos.
Good.
Now. Okay. All right. So, but you know, what's happening amongst, if you go to a Sullivan Chamber for a city council meeting, is you can very much get the feel of the election kind of. In what they choose to emphasize.
It's also when there's 20 policy orders. When they make a speech,
right? Yeah, for example, right? You know, so, I mean, and, you know, again, I'll admit that I'm a bit cynical about a lot of this, but, don't agree so fast.
Yeah.
But for example, there was one order on the agenda about creating a new position of, like, arts and culture czar or something. Director of Arts and Culture. You know, and I looked at that. Wait a minute!
Don't we have an arts council?
Don't we have an arts council?
Yeah.
Now, and I think it's a completely legitimate and, in fact, proper thing to do is to question whether the arts council
is fulfilling their function,
or for that matter, let's face it, the Cambridge Multicultural Arts Center.
It's the same issue, I think. It's like, are they too removed from the everyday?
Right. Yeah. Is the arts and culture infrastructure of the city?
Right.
Actually doing things the way they should be doing.
Exactly. And that, I think that is really the issue of why this came up.
Right. It should be the issue. But the thing is, it's kind of a little bit, in my view, sort of overstepping when you have the council says, Mr. Manager, we want you
to
manage in the following way by creating these and those positions.
I'm thinking,
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I think let's have the conversation first. But on the other hand, you know, if you have, you know, candidates who are not going to be elected, who are emphasizing this, and you're an incumbent councillor, and you would like to get those votes transferred to you by championing their issues, that's part of the way proportional representation, ranked choice voting works. Right. So, you know, I am definitely hearing some of the incumbents emphasizing issues that they know that some of the candidates who are probably not going to win are important because they're going to pick up those number twos and things. So, you know, so there's a piece of that, you know, I mean, I'm not in any way trying to say that the Cambridge Arts Council is 100% the best it could absolutely be, but maybe it is. I don't know. But I think they actually do a pretty good job, and if they need a little more staffing, okay, let's have the conversation. But that should be part of the budget cycle. We shouldn't be necessarily
saying... Well, obviously,
it's
going to generate some conversation, I guess, so...
Yeah.
Maybe that's good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, so those were some of the other things that were happening. One thing that was...
You know, if I hear one more time about Berkeley, Seattle, and all these other... I mean, and Jan Devereaux, actually.
Oh, is this the
For once, can we get ahead of Berkeley?
Right. So
and I'm thinking, you know, why do we always compare? I lived in Berkeley, but many years ago.
That's
where I discovered recycling. But
the moment they passed the cannabis business ordinance, there were press releases going out from multiple city councilors saying... Look, we're so ahead of the game. We're the first in the nation to do this.
I'm tired of that. We are so different than Berkeley. Please.
Yeah, come on. Let's just run the city, shall we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So the issue I think that you're referring to was a proposal that I think Jan Devereaux proposed this while ago.
A
notion about putting in labels on gas
pumps.
Oh,
the gas pumps.
When you go to fill your gas tank. Basically,
isn't it state regulated or federally regulated?
You can put a tag on a pump, I guess.
There's a lot of pumps.
Yeah, not that many actually in the city because most of the gas stations have been driven out of
town.
That's
a good point. So somebody should just make up a sticker on their own and ask the gas station if they can put it on there.
Well, the company would probably say no,
and the
individual
aren't
would,
they franchised?
Yes. And
Craig
no.
Kelly. Voted no on that.
Voted
he
no
said
on
of everything
so the idea
you
was,
do,
you know,
yeah.
So basically you want to do like a guilt sticker. Basically it says, I mean,
as if you're reading your gas pump.
Right?
I usually get mine pumped by the guy. I like to do real, and I'm not reading the gas pump.
Well, actually, now where I go get mine, there's like a little teeny little TV screen where they're putting ads on you while you're putting your gas in your car.
Yeah, okay. So I think it's a useless effort myself because it does have
useless.
To go through. It takes time to do that. And it's just like, is that what we want to spend our time on?
Yeah, but don't we have to do it before Berkeley does it? Don't we?
Oh, God.
You know, anyway, I just
why do they have so many gas stations in Berkeley?
Because in California, you got to drive everywhere.
No, well.
Maybe not so much in Berkeley.
They have good transit there. Or they did.
Maybe.
There's a lot of wealth in Berkeley.
That's right.
It's not unlike Cambridge.
That is true.
Probably another side
that is
too.
True. One other thing that came up, which is actually it was nothing much to say about it, you know, is that at some point, probably very soon, they'll act on it. So there's this thing called a welcoming community ordinance. Right. You know, and I think most people know because it actually always gets national attention when it happens. But, you know, in 1985,
wow.
Right, I went to the city clerk's office and got the original text of the sanctuary city ordinance. And because it just existed as sort of a photocopy sitting in the clerk's office. That was it. And people talked about sanctuary city, but nobody actually had any details of what it said.
Interesting.
So I went there and I scanned it and I typed it and made it into a
document
and put it on a website. So now this is one of the, you know, whenever people putting in, when there's controversy about sanctuary status, city status in other parts of the country, I get hits on the website because people do
the
Google search.
Were we the first?
I don't know that we were first. I think there were multiple cities, including Somerville, and probably all across the country who were doing so-called sanctuary cities.
Is this during the Reagan administration?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's in 1985. Primary sponsors were counselors Alice Wolf, Sandra Graham, David Sullivan, Al Vellucci.
Wow.
Right?
He's gone.
You know? And then some years ago, some years later, I guess it's 21 years later in 2006, then there was kind of like a redo. Maybe it was a little bit different.
2006 was the Bush years.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So during some of those, right, so there was kind of a reaction to that. So they passed almost like a redo. But it was essentially saying the same stuff, maybe a few little changes, you know, and that was counselors Simmons, Toomey, Sullivan, Michael Sullivan, Marjorie Decker, Ken Reeves, Henrietta Davis, and Brian Murphy, right? So now things are different, you know, so now you got that idiot, or pardon me, that the president
the
of the United States
is called president.
In office,
yeah.
Right? So he's there, and there's all, you know, everybody talks about immigration problems, and it's all screwed up or whatever. There's a lot of talk about immigration, customs enforcement coming, ICE, you know, coming in and bashing down doors.
And not in public charges, you have to be able to pay for it. Just all this stuff. Yeah.
But I would say that the term sanctuary city has become sort of like a toxic term.
Yes.
So I believe what you now have is this welcoming community ordinance.
Oh, so this would change the terminology?
Right, but what it does is it's basically sanctuary city, but it basically changes the terminology.
Oh, and how they should.
But it also has a little bit more specific about
ICE.
How one
yes.
should or should not be or cannot be interacting with immigration officials.
Oh, and this is interesting. The city solicitor, this is your opinion, expressed that council should be careful when limiting, not your opinion,
police
her
authority.
Opinion, police officer, discretion to force laws, and I agree.
Feedback from the police department saying, like, look, we're
careful.
Not the bad guys here, but
you can't
tie our hands entirely either.
Yeah.
So there are some concerns from the police department. So I think they're still kind of in the
so
process
is this,
of
So is this going to be
out.
Legally then looked at by this? Is
well,
that
ultimately,
what this is?
I mean, you know, the sanctuary cities ones were really, I could have this wrong, but they were basically more like resolutions. So this is the directive of the city council.
And had nothing really to do, did it mention police and enforcement?
It
and all
basically
that?
Suggested that
well, they were in churches,
non-cooperation.
So you couldn't enter a church anyway.
Well, those, you know, well, that's true too. But the thing is the sanctuary city ordinances were primarily saying like if the feds come a knocking, you don't answer the door. If you're a policeman and you pull somebody over for a small infraction, you don't immediately ring them up and send them off to the feds.
That's
right?
What the original one said?
I
didn't know that.
I think the modified version, 2006, probably was a little closer to that.
Yeah, I'd have to look at it.
So now everybody's being a little bit more specific about when you should or shouldn't be doing the job of federal officials.
Right.
And I kind of agree with that, is that if you're a Cambridge police officer, it's not your job to be an immigrations enforcer. On the other hand, if you pick somebody up for a felony, you don't want to have an ordinance telling you that you can't
report the guy. A true felony, and then they see that that person is on a list.
You know, so
well, it's like what that judge did, in a way.
Yeah, so you can... Yeah. Anyway, I think this is one of the great unresolved issues of the day.
Yeah.
Because it is sort of a community authority, state authority,
right,
federal authority, and they're not always 100% in
so
concert.
So this has to have then a feedback, or does it get that at the ordinance hearing?
This is actually being cast as an ordinance.
And okay, so it has to have.
And I think that may be fundamentally different than the way things were done in the past. So, and as an ordinance, it becomes part of the municipal code.
Right, because you're right. It says right here, resolution.
Yeah, and if you're basically saying that according to city law, police officers who can't do this, can do this, whatever, then you are kind of overstepping into, you know, I mean, even under the charter, you're basically, the police department exists under the city manager, not under the city council. And, you know, so you can promulgate policies, but you can't necessarily say absolutely that, you know, this is how you must do your policing, you know.
Right.
You know, you need a little bit more flexibility in that regard. But anyway, so that's still to come.
Well, that'll be interesting to see where that goes,
You know, and I don't know exactly what where in the timeline they are in the next version of that. But I guarantee you, if whatever Cambridge does, you know, we're going to get calls from Fox News and whatever around the country.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a little special thing about the People's Republic of Cambridge has done this and that. Yeah. Personally, I actually fundamentally kind of agree with doing things like this because I don't want to see somebody who has questionable immigration status choosing not to call the fire department when there's a fire.
Well, that's just already what's happening.
Or a person who's being
harassed. Well, think about what the census is going to be a total horrible thing.
If a woman who is subject to some sort of domestic abuse but has questionable legal status, should that person not be in touch with the police and just take it?
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's...
So I am generally supportive of selective enforcement and... Mm-hmm. But I'm also willing to trust our local police departments to be judicious.
Yes.
You know, rather than
they don't
want to
do the job of the
You know, I mean, because I think we have total capability to be good about that, and I kind of hope that's really the direction we're going.
Well, we just have about half a minute left, so
I think just say one quick thing is I think the last when we last met we were we did talk about some of the politics and I won't go into that, but
could do maybe the next week because there's no city council
but
meeting.
Just say you can look it up on a website. It's all posted now.
The
Cambridge
slates,
Citizens Coalition selected 9 endorsees, so now I think we got 4 different slates to choose from. Take it for what it's worth.
Okay.
Right. I mean, I'm not a big fan of any of them, but hey, see ya. Anyways, see you soon on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye.